Well, I mean, we can, I don't know, start off with
Yeah.
like a mission statement almost. Like a.
I'll let people know this is gonna be weird.
That's not what I was gonna say, but yeah, sure. You could just go with that. That's fine by me too.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone. Oh, you know what? I was going to do like a whole spooky intro. Hold on. Welcome to an extra spooky episode of Jabber and the Drone, the podcast that politely disagrees with the placement of your head. This is Cassidy Robinson from Los Angeles, California. Keith's still gone. He moved last weekend, so we have on Jabber alumnist, Richard Wally.
My number's up on the wall.
And we're not reviewing anything this week, especially. There's nothing in the theaters that we could see at the same time. So we just thought we're going to do just a Halloween episode, a horror film episode. So, of course, I have Richard, the horror enthusiast.
A chitty chat. We're having a chitty chat about horror.
Just talk about horror. We talked a lot about horror last week. We've been talking about a lot about horror in general over the last few weeks. But that's what you do on October.
Well, it just happens. And if you don't, I don't know. You just got to get into the spirit of things.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a very Halloween-y Halloween month. Like, I feel like everyone's kind of was really excited for it this month in a way that they weren't always.
You know, there is a horror writer that I like named Brian Keene. I was on his podcast one time, but he kept saying something at the horror con that I was at a year ago. And he kept saying that anytime there's a conservative president, horror in general does better and sells better.
I've heard that as well. Yeah.
So
we have that to look forward to. Silver linings.
yeah, sure. That's what we'll call it.
Richard, you're from Portland, Oregon. I should say that, which people probably may or may not remember.
Stump Town. Bridge City, whatever you want to call it.
Rose City.
Rose City as well, yeah.
Yeah. You have a short story published in a anthology that is available for people to buy, right?
I do. Yeah, the short story collection is called... It's an anthology collection called Terror in 16 Bits. It's based off of like horror video games. It's a little short stories based off of horror video games. And it has some, has like Matthew Bartlett, some people might know. It has Oren Gray, and me, which is the most important. no, it's my first piece published, and it's a short story. It's under, I think, 3,000 words, or maybe
what's
it's
the title of your story?
It's called The Lump and His Boy. It's based off of the old, it's not even a horror video game. It's just, it's kind of actually a very cutesy video game that I made ugly called The Boy and His, called The Boy and His Blob. So I did a story based on that. I just made it ugly. Basically, I made it like, based it on, we're both from Pocatello, Idaho originally. And there was a couple of kids that killed a girl there. I think it was like 2007. And that,
something
it
like
always,
that?
It always bothered me. So that was just floating around in the head a lot too when I was writing it. But it's about a kid, a latchkey kid. He goes home by himself after he got beat up by a bully, and just he has to kind of take care of himself because his mom works a lot of jobs and he's an only child. And during the night, he sneaks out and is watching television, and this bright green light is in the sky, and he goes out to investigate it, and he finds a little friend, and they go on a murder spree together. So.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, like you would.
Well, cool. So where can people find it? Like, how do they purchase it?
The best place to go, now I emphasize best, mm-hmm. is the actual, if you go to Muzzleland Press, which is the press that published the piece, and you go to their store MV, that is the best place to buy a physical copy of it. Mm-hmm. Of course, it is on the Evil A or Evil Amazon. So you can go there as well. You can even search me by name and it will come up. That's how fancy I am.
Cool. Well, there you go. So you've done a horror short.
Mm-hmm.
And are you working on anything new? Is there any other opportunities like that in the horizon?
Well, I've been trying to, because for a long time I was just kind of writing to, I guess, practice. I don't know. I was just kind of writing what I wanted to write. And so I've been kind of writing towards more publications and stuff, mm-hmm. themed anthologies. There's one I'm writing for right now. It's a horror film one. It's, no, well, it's a horror anthology that's theme is about film. And it's supposed to be a little bit more like bizarre. And so the piece that I did was a lot more surreal. Whereas this other piece I was trying to make a little bit more brass and tacks. So.
All right. Yeah, I can get into that. Well, cool. So again, just in case people forgot, what's the name of the anthology?
The anthology is called Terror in 16 Bits.
And you can find it on Amazon.
And on muzzleandpress.com. And you just go to their store and it's in store MV.
Usually, you know, pre-baby Richard.
Oh, I was like, what? Like, for some reason, that should have clicked quicker, but I was like, pre-baby
what?
Richard?
What are you talking about?
Are you talking about, like middle school or high school? What are you talking about? And then I was like, oh, yeah, when I didn't have the child,
right.
The kiddo, the baby.
For the baby. Last year, as it was called, mm-hmm. you used to make Halloween and October. You know, there was a lot of pageantry around it. As far as you went out and did Halloween-y things, you go to Halloween parties, you watched a lot of horror movies, and I know that hasn't changed. I follow you on Facebook. But what have you done this month? Is the baby changed these rituals a little bit, or...
It changes your whole life. It's awful. Like, having a child is like the best and worst thing at the same time.
Right.
It's changed Halloween, but there are some things that, like, you kind of get to rediscover it as a kid again. Mm-hmm. And while she's still not really old enough to completely participate, we did jack-o'-lanterns. Mm-hmm. And wow, that was so much fun. I mean, it was, I always kind of enjoyed it as an adult even,
right?
But it's really different in that situation. So in that sense, it's great. In another sense, we can't really go to spook houses because, you know, carrying a 20-pound bag of weight through one of those would be hellish.
Right.
And she'd get scared and stuff or whatever, but.
Right. Right. That too.
But in general, so it changes, you know, and in a few years we get to do dress up and it'll be, so it's this year, basically we've been so tired out of our minds that we've just done the like bare minimum. I've never had a hard time reaching 31 movies in a month, and mm-hmm. I'm struggling, Cassidy.
I was struggling, and I don't have a baby.
Yeah.
So, well, I couldn't even do it. I've watched, I think, maybe, like, if counting stuff I've reviewed for the paper and the show and everything, I've probably watched something like 10.
That's bad.
10, 11. Yeah, and that's actually good for me.
I've watched, like, 20, 22, somewhere around there.
So, this is going to be really lopsided when we start talking about what we've watched.
Right.
And some of them I've already talked about on the podcast, so I'm not going to go into them as much. But let's go ahead and get started with that. Let's just talk about stuff you've never seen before.
Okay.
And I guess we can start. What was the biggest surprise of a new horror film that you've never watched before?
That was the biggest surprise.
Mm-hmm. Either good or bad.
You know what? Probably the one that first comes to mind is Midnight Meat Train.
Right, that's Bradley Cooper before he was Bradley Cooper.
Right, and the Vinnie Jones or whatever.
Mm-hmm, and based on a Clive Barker short, I believe.
I think so, yeah. I didn't really know much about it. I thought it was kind of your standard slasher, but like on a train. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. It has some weird... It is kind of a slasher, like, but and that's not a problem for me normally. But it has some kind of different culty, supernaturally kind of elements as well. I actually really dug it. It was a lot of fun. There was some... I could see why some people would be kind of turned off to it at a point in time, because mm-hmm. there's some CGI blood and gore stuff that's pretty silly, but I kind of enjoyed it too for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's mm-hmm. like watching a bad gore effect. Like sometimes it's just entertaining. So, but
yeah, I remember that coming out when I worked at the video store,
mm-hmm.
and it was one of those ones because, you know, Clive Barker and like Vinnie Jones is, you know, he's in a lot of garbage, but like I like him as an actor.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I might want to see this. And then I heard such conflicting things about it always. Like, it was constantly, like, some people were like, oh, yeah, this is really scary, it's really cool, and some people were like, oh, this is garbage, and, like, and then, it's not just, like, people who don't like horror saying it's garbage and people who do like it saying it's great. It was, like, a weird mix even there, and it was a weird mix of people I trust and people I didn't, so I just never knew about that, like, should I watch this movie or not?
Well, still, you have a 50-for-50 shot.
Right. I mean, because at this point...
there's a lot of times that you're like, Richard, you're ridiculous.
Right.
And then there's sometimes where you're like, yeah, this one I couldn't tell for you personally, if I'm saying so. But
it was... You found it to be a surprise.
Yeah, I was surprised. Well, yeah, I just kind of went in. I just watched it randomly. I was on vacation a week ago. I hate watching things on, like, a computer monitor. Like, I did that a couple of times, and it about killed me. But that one I got to see in, like, a big screen, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good time, and I liked the weird, more supernaturally or whatever kind of elements of that story. I thought it was pretty cool. You could argue that there is some subtext in it if I rewatched it, but I didn't have that part of my brain turned on. I just had my like basic functions of sure. my brain on. Another thing of having a baby. Just your basic functions are on. That's it. All the time.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I'm trying to think of what was the biggest surprise for me of the small amount of foreign movies I've seen in comparison. I have an answer, but I sort of want to save that for the best, because I'm going to ask like what the best is. But I think probably the biggest surprise was Motel Hell.
That one,
because there's a lot kind of going on in that movie. Like, it's, you know, as far as like when it came out, 1980, mm-hmm. and like, yes, obviously it's taking a lot from Texas Chainsaw as far as this concept goes. But it's I would say this: it is to Texas Chainsaw what Return of the Living Dead was to Dawn of the Dead.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, it's kind of a campy sort of horror send up, like horror comedy send up, but it also has an identity of its own that you can get into without thinking of it in context to the thing it's sending up.
Well, and I think it's a horror comedy, but I don't think it necessarily is poking fun that much at Texas Chainsaw per se.
Well, I think there's some psycho in there too, because I like have a hotel and.
Sure.
I mean, there's a bunch of stuff. I think they're just using horror tropes in general, but it's not like a lazy sort of you know, date movie, epic movie kind of
right.
send up.
It's like, definitely an homage. It's definitely a big homage to Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
And it has some genuinely disturbing stuff in it, like the people with their throats cut. They were buried neck deep in the ground with bags over their head.
That's really fun imagery, yeah.
Yeah, and like the sounds they're making, it's pretty disgusting. The way I described it when I talked about it the last time on the show is I said it feels like, to me, it felt like if John Waters had directed a Texas Chainsaw movie. Because it has that kind of like, that sort of trailer trash, campy... irony fun. About it that yeah. like Pink Flamingos or a Female Trouble has, but it also you know, has a ton of gore and murder.
No. That's actually a perfect explanation. Anybody that's like interested in it, it is. If you like Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which came out after.
Mm-hmm.
And probably is heavily influenced by that film.
Which is weird because that both Texas Chainsaw and Texas Chainsaw 2 were directed by Tobe Hooper. So I'm like pretty convinced that he saw that and was like, oh, I can do that. And like it's this weird snake eating its own tail thing, like the influence of the influence to the influence.
Well, I think there was a lot of horror comedy coming out after, you know, in that time period. And I think he was like, you know what? I'm going to do that. Going back to
Motel
Hell. Yeah, it's a crazy fucking movie. I tried to tell you about it, but I didn't want to give away too much. I'm just that is a crazy movie.
I didn't want to know too much either, which most of the movies I've seen, I didn't know that much going into. Most of it has been a pretty 80s heavy stuff. But okay, here's one. Another one. What one was the scariest, objectively scariest? That doesn't mean that, I know that means not necessarily a lot to you. But project what you think the general public would find the scariest.
Oh, the general public?
Yeah, you know, a horror-friendly general public. Like, if we're doing the Scoville scale of spiciness of horror,
What kind of horror fan? Because I always think you're a horror fan, but then there's the extreme horror crowd. See, now I get kind of like, now I'm getting too bogged down into definitions, but. It kind of depends on what your poison. For a more classic kind of version, there is just kind of the old. I watched the 1970s version of Body Snatchers, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and that has some really cool like horror effects in it, and it has that deep rooted paranoia, and it has some really, really, I think that a more classic fan, somebody who's into Shining, Exorcist, that kind of stuff, they'd go for that. If you're into kind of fun romps, I would say that Wolf Cop was actually okay. I mean, it does have some, it's kind of like, it kind of has like almost like, this is going to be weird, but it's like Deadpool-ish kind of bro humor. But if you kind of like that kind of stuff, it was surprisingly kind of fun.
But was it scary? I asked what was the scariest.
The paranoia in that. If you're talking about the new ones I've watched, I always find one of the ones that I rewatched this year again was The Wicker Man, and for some reason the first time you watch it, that's just like it's just so bizarre. It's like this weird folk. Musical thing you're watching.
Sure.
But the second time, it was probably the third time I watched it, I started recognizing like all the things that they were doing to set this guy up and this whole, and this time I was just really looking at like the ritual behind of everything that they were doing. This very like just base ritual. Dead and Buried, I rewatched. That's like classic 80s, horror stuff right there, and it's kind of a zombie film, kind of not in a traditional sense, but that's a good thing. It's a film I think I don't know why it's so underrated. I think it's a great one, and I think more people should go back to it and appreciate that one. And it also has there's a certain type of horror film that that I actually watched about four of these right in a row. Wicker Man was one of them, Dead and Buried, Oh, We Are Still Here, and Halloween 3. I watched all of these right in a row. I really like these kind of horror films that have like the basically it's like one person versus the whole town.
Right, that whole like conspiracy thing.
Yeah, I really like dig horror films that kind of have that vibe to them. Mm-hmm. There's something that's just very
Them Against the World.
Well, Them Against the World, but I think I almost relate to it. In a sense, because sometimes, you know, growing up in where we did, I can kind of gravitate towards that and relate to it. Like, I kind of sometimes felt like nobody else saw what I saw. I was like, this is what's wrong with this place.
You know?
And it's not that it's not even that Pocatello is that bad. It's just that it wasn't good for me. But this put the horror twist on those feelings and those thoughts. So
sure. Yeah. Rosemary's Baby kind of has that vibe, too.
Yeah, it's kind of the apartment block, but yeah, that would work.
Mm-hmm. If I'm going to go with scariest, this is both for me scariest and best of new horror I've never seen. And I watched this per recommendation of last week's guest, Stan Wyman, when we were talking about queer horror, or how the queer community has reinterpreted certain horror films for, you know, to mean certain things to them. He suggested I watch The Hitcher, which I'd never seen before. The original Hitcher with Rutger Hauer in the 80s. And that by far, cinematically, is the best of the stuff I've watched. It's a real film. It's kind of a Western. Have you ever seen it?
I saw it a long time ago and I don't remember it that well. And to be honest, it wasn't at the time that I watched it, which was that, mass horror summer.
When you were a teenager.
This was junior high or middle school for some. Okay. It was around seventh grade. But I watched a horror movie basically every day throughout the whole summer. I tried to watch the whole horror section. I'm pretty sure I did it. So a lot of it blends in, and there are movies I had confused together. I did watch it then, but I can't remember bits.
You should look at it again. It's really interesting. But it's also really well shot. There's all these Western vistas, Texas vistas. And it reminds me a lot of Spielberg's Duel. You could tell whoever made that, I don't have the information in front of me, but kind of probably took that as inspiration, this idea of this hot pursuit. And then constantly being bested and unable to shake off this person.
Well, there's also that whole Southern Gothic kind of
There's definitely a lot of that in there. It's also just genuinely disturbing. It is one of those movies, just like you were talking about, where at one point he kind of gets framed for these murders that this hitcher is doing, and he's just this young kid, and this hitcher just knows exactly how to make every situation look like it was him. And he all the police are after him, and it got me in this weird way of it's just frustrating, I'm frustrated for the protagonist, not at the movie.
Well, talking in that kind of thematic, to me, it almost sounds you could almost construe that in a way where it's the West Memphis 3,
Sure.
Yeah. In that kind of sense. Not necessarily them, but
but that
being
kind of
the
thing.
Sacrificial, the scapegoat.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah. I think when we were having the conversation with Sam about it, he mentioned it in regards as to an AIDS allegory, because he said that at the time hitchhiking was really tied to the gay community at the time, and what that meant, and being able and finding this person, and then after everyone he touches dies, and da 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 da.
Totally off subject, but did you guys discuss Nightmare on Elm Street 2 at all?
It came up, but briefly, actually, not as much as you would think. But if you haven't listened to that episode, I highly recommend it. It's really interesting. The Hitcher is great. So, per recommendation, I definitely say see it. It really holds up. Rutger Hauer's a mad genius in that movie. This is right off of Blade Runner and that kind of era. So he's still,
menacing and creepy.
Yeah. And a total weirdo in the best way. All the performance, Jennifer Jason Leigh's in it and really young. She's really good. Yeah. And it looks great. Cool soundtrack. I like it. And it's also pretty creepy. At the end of the movie had me generally kind of genuinely in a fog, a mood.
Okay.
In a good way. All right. I think we might have the same answer for this, but let's see. What was the biggest WTF moment in a horror movie you saw this month?
As in good or bad?
Either.
Okay. I'm trying to think of the new ones I've watched. Probably it is the same if I'm thinking correctly. Society?
Yep.
It's kind of, it reminds me in a lot of ways of the bad Nightmare on Elm Street movies. I still enjoy some of those, but you know what I mean? It's got kind
the
of this
ones.
Weird,
yeah,
this weird plasticky quality to it. And it's just, again, going back to that same theme, one individual versus, this section of a population. And
right.
It's, I mean, there's just this last act that just is squirmy and grimy. And it's kind of gross, but it's kind of Cronenberg-esque, only kind of, though. Because, again, it's like if the Nightmare on Elm Street was directed by, those bad ones were directed by Cronenberg or something.
Or vice versa.
Or yeah, vice versa. So
it's a body horror of sorts.
There's definitely a coming of age, like, psychosexual thing going on.
For sure.
For one of the characters specifically, but... but I don't know if it's so much about that. I also would say it's kind of playing on the times because it came out in, I believe, in the 80s as well.
It was made in 89. I think it had a delayed release to like 91 or 2.
Well, then, I think it definitely was still playing in that ballpark where maybe,
yuppie culture. Maybe
Motel Hell was very much at the beginning of it, but was more telling than a lot of things, but it definitely had that, the yuppie culture, like you said, and it gets grimy. Orgy of flesh, you could say.
You could say exactly that. It's one of those infamous horror movies, the first time I ever heard of it, mm-hmm. and I bookmarked it in my mind to see it at some point, was an old podcast, it's now defunct, called the B-Movies Podcast, and they mm-hmm. did a list of the grossest horror movies.
Sure.
Or the biggest gross out moments in horror film, and they brought up Society. And it's kind of a cult film. Like, it's not a movie, like, obviously you can tell by the delayed release and everything, that it's not a movie a lot of people saw. But it had the gore effects in it were done by Screaming Jay something.
Sure.
I forgot his name.
I know who you're talking about, though.
It says at the beginning of the movie, but he did a lot of the effects for the Nightmare on Elm Street films. Specifically, I think Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, which is one of the more effects heavy of the bunch. Mm-hmm. And so it has that whole like plastic realities thing that was big in the 80s, like when people were playing around with different rubbers and different latexes and stuff to create these weird surreal moments rather than just doing gore, like people's guts flying out. There was plenty of that going on in the 80s as well. But, you know, you had the films like the Clive Barker stuff, or you had the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, or the Cronenberg, where now it's not technically gore, it's this weird, surreal, disturbing imagery.
It kind of taps into the disgusting, the gag factor in horror.
Right, yeah. This uncomfortability with our bodies. But... So I agree with you. It's a head scratcher on a lot of levels. On one, it's supposed to kind of be it's almost on the nose a satire.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's supposed to be kind of funny and light at points. Like the first half of it almost feels kind of like a cheesy 80s teen movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's just these weird things that happen along the way. And the lead actor, I think, is probably the worst thing in it. He's too convincingly yuppie to feel like an outsider in this environment.
He's kind of the product of his environment, kind of. That's how I kind of looked at it. Like, he was still one of them, but he wasn't one of them. I don't know if that makes sense, but it worked just fine. The film in general is kind of a weird thing tonally, and
it's trying, it's really ambitious tonally, like it's trying to do a mm-hmm. lot of things, maybe too many things, because it also kind of like reminded me of kind of like the 80s era Lynch stuff, like Blue Velvet and Wild at Heart. It like has that kind of vibe sometimes, where everybody's like kind of overacting, but on purpose, like everything's just a little heightened, a little soap opera-ish.
Definitely all the parents, and that's kind of the stuff that works the mm-hmm. best in those that film. You're right that he's the weakest link, the kid, but... I don't know. The film, I enjoyed it for the first screening. I don't think this is something I'd watch a lot because I didn't necessarily derive a whole lot of enjoyment from it.
Well, I think
there's something about the film that just is kind of meh.
I think on a... I would watch it again, but I would only if I was watching with people who haven't seen it, just to get the like reaction.
That for sure, just because, yeah. Because
it is such, like, the last 30 minutes, it's just, it's, I don't even have articulation for what's going on there. Plus, I don't want to spoil it all the way. Like, you just kind of have to see it.
You almost can't. But yeah, I would say if you're into that kind of gross out stuff that Cassidy was talking about, and you like to just kind of push the envelope a little, it does that for sure.
It's one of the few films that I would say fans of like Naked Lunch and fans of Nightmare on Elm Street might find common ground on. I mean, I know that like
Cronenberg that's a weird connection, but sure.
Right, you know what I mean? Like it tries to be heady in some way, it doesn't work at all. On a satirical level, on a story level, I think They Live pretty much accomplishes everything that movie's trying to do better. But you know, as far as talking about like the Reagan 80s and like, you know, the classist systems and overindulgence of wealth and blah blah blah, all of that stuff, I think John Carpenter covers with a little bit more grace. But like, it is something you've never seen before. Like, there are some images in there that you're just like, well, that's there forever.
Well, it's, yeah. And it's been cleaned up. I think Arrow is the one that's done it. So it's not hard to watch at all. I enjoyed it.
Hard as an availability, not to withstand.
Yeah. Or, you know, the other kind of hard. Anyway.
So Society, it's there. It is a cult movie to the max.
Yeah, if you like gross cult movies, try that.
I don't even know where to go from there. I'll just talk about a couple other things that I saw without any kind of real direction.
That's fine.
I watched Pieces last night for the first time.
That's a crowd movie to me.
That is definitely. It's kind of a so bad it's good. Which I didn't know going in.
Well, it also, it's so bad it's good, but it's also, why it's a strange one of those is because it has that kind of, it's a Spanish movie, but it kind of has that giallo kind of link almost, or feel at least, because you've got the old buildings and everything is kind of beautiful. And it's well shot a lot of the times, and the lighting's really is good. Mm-hmm. But the acting,
really overbearing kind of soundtrack or score that
leads you through.
Yeah.
It kind of, all those scores really drive you through the movie. Mm-hmm. And in the best ones, I should say. But yeah, it has, and that end punchline is, it's a good one. It's a good one.
It's, I don't even, is it good? It's something.
It's good. If you watch it, see, again, this is a crowd movie. If you want to put on something dumb and you can make fun of and laugh at, and just kind of get a kick out of. There's some weird non sequiturs too. But I'm specifically thinking of the one with the Asian professor. Yeah. That was my favorite, personally.
Just this random Asian stereotype pops out of the bushes in the middle of the movie. We've never seen him before, never see him again after. He's just in one scene, and he apparently is a karate instructor or something, and then he says some ridiculous lines and then walks out of the movie.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
So I guess to set it up, it's a Spanish film. It was made in the 80s. And it's kind of a Halloween-ish knockoff, like very similar, like about a kid who's traumatized and then like becomes a serial killer who preys on sorority girls in this college campus, which I guess is supposed to take place in around Annapolis or DC or something like that, but it's clearly not.
Right.
Yeah. And it has this, like, because it's a Spanish film, like the giallo movies, it has this weird dubbing effect where the people are some of the actors are mouthing the wrong words and some of them are mouthing the right words, but none of it's all ADR across the board. Mm. So everybody looks like they, you know, are saying somebody else's audio because they probably are.
And the women are all like strangely attractive.
Oh, like, yeah. Like they're all Playboy models. Everybody like in the movie.
Yeah. They come from some strange other dimension, but
yeah, Like, and for a slasher movie, that's par for the course. I mean, a ton of gratuitous nudity. This is almost more an exploitation movie than I would say even the Giallo movies. Like, Giallo, like, has, agreed, like, has, like, at least a pretense of sort of an artsiness, whereas this is just like, no, yeah, we're, this is TNA. This is, well, TNA, and then we're going to watch women get chopped up.
Well, it is somewhere in between all those things. The reason I say that is because it does follow kind of the plot structure in a lot of ways, and it has a lot of the stylistic influences, mm-hmm.
It definitely has a lot of the feel. I mean, it feels like an inept Argento movie, but it kind of has an Argento vibe.
But it definitely, it does lean more towards, like, a more an explanation, exploitation like core,
right?
And but I very much enjoy this. I have never watched it outside of a crowd.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I was watching it the wrong way. I enjoyed it, and I got the big, I laughed a lot during it in the appropriate in the appropriate ways. But I did kind of feel like, oh, this is definitely something you're not supposed to be watching by yourself. But you know, the first time I ever saw The Room was by myself, so. And then I had to share it with everybody I knew. So Pieces, yeah, I don't know, kind of a head scratcher. What else did I see? We talked about The Hitcher, Society, Pieces. Those are the most recent ones that I watched. Well,
I did a Werewolf Week, and I watched Yeah, my first week of the Halloween month, I watched Werewolves for 7 days. and I did a lot of the usual suspects. Dog Soldiers, Howling, A Werewolf in London, just the Wolfman, Universal. I did mention Wolf Cop. I kind of, everything I needed to say I already said about it. But another movie that's kind of also bizarre, but if you like werewolf movies, it's called Bad Moon. It came out in 96. It's actually got the kid from Dennis the Menace in it.
Okay. Yeah. He was also in, Rushmore. Yeah.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. So as far as werewolf effects go, kind of a cool movie to watch of those four. It's kind of, it's very 90s. there's kind of a Lassie kind of stuff going on. There's a hero dog basically in the movie.
Yeah.
I kind of wish I would have known some of the stuff going up front with it. it's very much like by the numbers. But it has gratuitous boobs in the first like little bit. But if you like werewolf movies and you want to see some good werewolf effects, I mildly recommend it under those specific things. It is very 90s though. Oh my goodness.
It dates a little.
It dates hard. Like, and I'm not talking about the werewolf effects, and I'm not talking about the actual story. I'm talking about the style, the how it's told, how the characters act, how they talk to each other. I'm actually not a huge fan. Like, there is obviously some great stuff from the 90s, but when I say 90s, I'm talking the bad 90s stuff. I'm not necessarily a huge fan of some of that, even though I love Predator 2. This movie has some weird stuff when it comes to that, but werewolf effects are really cool. Pretty standard werewolf movie other than that.
I'm looking at the cover right now on IMDb, and I remember seeing that in video stores when I was a kid.
Well, it's also a Scream Factory release.
Re-release.
Yeah. I watched it on their app. It's kind of like their app. You can actually watch a few things on. I watched another movie on there as well, but it, you have to watch previews for 30 seconds every, like, I think it's like 30 minutes or something like that. So it's not that bad, but it felt right though, almost because of that 90s watching things on TV kind of feel for me. Bad Moon, watch it if you like werewolf effects. Wolf Cop, watch it if you like, you know, kind of a Deadpoolish kind of humor, but you want it to be very gory.
That's more recent, isn't it?
Werewolf Cop came out in 2015, I believe.
Yeah. I thought that it was. It's one of those kind of like postmodern exploitation things.
And another newer one too that came out that I watched was Late Phases. It's sort of interesting because it's told from a kind of a different lead character than normal. You get it from like a very old man, in a retirement like village. So that's kind of interesting in that sense. Some of the werewolves, I think, look kind of silly. But other than that, I think it's a fairly engaging, kind of fun werewolf flick. So,
Yeah, the only werewolf movie I saw this month was The Howling, which we've already argued about that online. Well, I don't think it holds up very well.
Well, I see. This is the other thing I was going to suggest: is we could have two debates. We could have the Dawn of the Dead versus Day of the Dead debate, and those and the American Werewolf in London versus The Howling debate.
Yeah, one of which I have the more controversial opinion on; the other one I don't.
Yeah, I think with the specifically the werewolf duo, it's a little bit of a mixed bag depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah. My only piece about The Howling, which I already talked about on the first time I talked about it on the podcast, was the effects don't date very well. The dialogue's pretty bad. I like the idea of a werewolf story taking place in like a swingers community. Like, that's cool. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's like, if you wanted to remake it, I wouldn't be heartbroken. I think there's a lot of room for improvement.
I disagree. I think that the effects hold up fairly well. I think that, like in 4K, I can kind of see some of it, like the little whiskers and stuff that kind of jiggle a little too much. There are certain werewolves in that film that look a little silly. Mm-hmm. But I think that the main one and the coming attraction, but even Joe Dante talking about that film, he says he held the camera on the effects too long. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true, but I think it's interesting. I think it's not, I think versus American Werewolf in London, that has a very typical three act. I think it's a little bit more interesting. I think it's a little bit more adult of subject matter. And I think in thematically, it's certainly more adult. Whereas I think that American Werewolf in London is a fun film. The werewolf I always thought looked like a puppet. You can see that his feet do not hit the floor ever. Mm-hmm. The reason I liked that film was because of the ghouls that follow the main character. In fact, the theater scene is my favorite scene from that film because it's very funny, but very chilling at the same time. Like, it's a very weird thing because when I watch it, I'm watching it and I'm like kind of laughing. But when I think about the situation, I'm like, man, this is messed up. So I think that that's a perfect, like, that is a, in a scene wise, that is a perfect scene for a horror comedy.
Yeah. No, that works really well. I think, generally speaking, it's not just like if we're comparing effects, which I just, yeah, like the actual werewolf itself in American Werewolf in London, which we see very little of, on purpose, are not like totally great. Like, they don't super hold up, but if you like compare the transformation sequence, which that was the big thing, was like they both were using, again, talking about those latexes and stuff that were coming of age in the 80s, they were both using the changeo head, and the one in the sequence, the changing effect sequence in American Werewolf in London, I think still holds up and is still very physical and very real looking to a certain extent. And the one in The Howling looks like Manimal.
See, I like the bubbling effect on the skin. I think it's interesting. And I think it's a different version. But, I mean, again, we're talking... I mean, this is
both, like, movies came out the same year, too, 82.
Yeah, and it's very much opinion-based, which, if we're talking just about the special effects. But, I think that the plotting of the other one is more interesting. Like,
well, plot of The Howling, like, there's shades of Cat People. I was reminded a lot of that movie. Like, in Cat People, there's only one cat person. I think there's a sequel, Return to Cat People, which I haven't seen yet. And then there was a remake in the 80s. I thought of, like, the whole idea of, like, connecting animal sexual energy. And it is really similar to what's going on in the transformation stuff in Cat People.
And to be honest, I love both films. Mm-hmm. I gravitate a little bit more towards The Howling. Just at a theme level, and kind of like the type of, like, I like that it's a kind of more of a straight horror versus a comedic horror of it would really get down to quibbling, even though that's kind of our thing. But
that is our thing, and I'm going to quibble because I think that the Howling is goofier than American Werewolf in London. Yeah, I mean, and I think on purpose. Like, I think the Howling is trying to be funnier more often. Like, I actually don't get why people call American Werewolf in London a horror comedy. Like, it has funny parts. Like, there's funny dialogue, but like, there's funny dialogue in Scream. There's funny dialogue in like a lot of horror movies. So, but I never considered
Scream is so meta that it makes it work. I think it's kind of got a strange comedic element to it.
There's the Piccadilly Circus scene and American Werewolf, which is like kind of broadly comedic, like it's sort of slapsticky, but that's kind of it. Like all the stuff of him like dreaming about Nazis killing his family, like I'm not like yucking it up there.
No, that scene's that is actually one of the more intense scenes, but that's a particular scene when you're actually talking about like the friend coming back and him talking to him. I mean, all that stuff. But
to me, that's like
funny.
Gallows humor. That's not like a comedy set piece.
But that's horror comedy to me. A lot of times, to me, American Werewolf in London isn't like a yuckity yuck kind of like scary movie type like horror movie. Like when I say horror comedy, that's one of those ones that's really strange when you watch it, because sometimes you don't know if you're supposed to be laughing or if you're supposed to be feeling uncomfortable. And I think it's like a very firm mix of 50-50.
All right.
Like, you know what? And I think there's several of those.
I think this has to, we need a tiebreaker on this one. We need the audience out there. Email us, jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. Weigh in, or Twitter, you can, at Jabber Podcast. What do you think is the stronger film? Or between the two, Howling or American Werewolf in London?
Also, I never got I don't get the comedy thing you're talking about with the Howling. Maybe you thought it was dumb, but that doesn't make it a comedy.
Anyway. No, like it had like Dick Miller and stuff. Like there was stuff in it that reminded me of Gremlins. Like it had that kind of vibe to it.
Oh, I thought that was just a Joe Dante thing, but I thought it was one of his most serious films.
The Joe Dante tone, we'll call it.
but I do enjoy Howling quite a bit. When we're talking about Day versus Dawn, I think Day isn't a super complex, or Dawn is not a super complex plot line. Mm-hmm. It's fairly straightforward, and I think it's more talking, and to me it's more thematic, and it is kind of, it did have, you know, the backing of it did come from Dario Argento's father's company. He was one of the producers on it. For Dawn of the Dead, correct. Mm-hmm. And it does, I think, share some of the qualities from that type of filmmaking with the American kind of filmmaking. But I think it's an easier watch. I think it is the more poppy of the two. And in this case, not like the other two movies we're talking about, I think it's for the better. I don't actually, you know, besides Bub, there's a lot of it I don't like. I think it's meandering, and I don't think it's purposely meandering. I think he just kind of loses the point in there, and it's just this angry scrawl of thoughts Day of the Dead. Bub was fun, and I liked that. If you wanted to do more of a people movie, then I think that there were better ways to do that, and especially in those in a Romero horror, it's just boring. I just was bored by it.
See, I'm more bored by Dawn of the Dead. Like, I was surprisingly bored by Dawn of the Dead the first time I saw it. I appreciate it more now than I did the first time. But I had more of an immediate connection to Day of the Dead. Now, I'm willing to say on this case, this is the much more controversial opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to say that this is just a taste thing, and you can chalk it up to that. Like, I like the idea of, like, people being held up in a small environment more, like, of the three, still, Night of the Living Dead is my favorite. I'm not going to say it's the best.
I even like Dawn a little more than Night, but
I know most people do. But I like sort of the Richard Matheson Twilight Zone vibe of Night of the Living Dead the most. But
I can get behind that. With Night of the Living Dead specifically, it's also a great film. I mean, you can say a lot of things from it being low budget and from the time period that it was from, but I think it still holds up and it's a really fun watch, and I can watch it, you know, probably about as much as Dawn.
Well, it's like a play. Like, it feels like, I mean, it feels like very much like a stage play. It kind of feels like a teleplay, like the Twilight Zone episodes, just kind of stretched out. Like, and sure, it's a chamber piece. I like that one the most for a lot of reasons. I think the black and white, like, gives it this cool sort of timeless, like, it connects it to horror past, but then the ending, like, connects it to horror future. Like, it's really, like, a watershed moment in horror because of that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that and Psycho were the birth of modern horror, a lot of people say, and I know you know that, but it, but yeah, I mean, you have to give props to that film. I'm not going to argue that one. I'm not going to argue. I think Dave's pretty obvious. And even Romero says there are two basic crowds. There's the night versus the dawn. Mm-hmm. And then there's a very small amount of trolls who like, and this is Romero saying,
I know,
who like day.
Day and, is their movie.
You're really in the night. But
I'm really the night guy. But if I'm comparing Dawn and Day, I will probably watch Day, because I think the gore effects are better. And you know, if that's why you're watching it, then that you get more out of it for that. The zombies just look a little bit better. I like the, you know, there's more variety of zombies. There's a clown zombie. There's a zombie without a jaw. There's a zombie that has just been eaten by an alligator. Those kind of things.
Okay.
I like sort of the dystopian feel of Day a little bit more. It's a darker movie. It's a much more unhappy movie. Like there's I mean, Dawn is not like a yippee hooray happy movie, but it is sometimes, like when they're like shopping in the mall and like gathering like supplies and stuff. I get it. Like, here's the thing. I get why people like that movie. They really like the idea of like figuring out the survival stuff. And it's why it's a reason why Walking Dead has been going on like 7 seasons longer than it should. And people love that whole idea of like, we're bandied together. We have to figure out how we're going to survive. We got to figure out like where the corridors are, where we're going to block the zombies off here and there. Everybody loves that stuff. That's not necessarily what I love about the genre. But again, so this is like just purely a taste thing. I'm not saying on the quality of the film.
I think too, it kind of, the reason Dawn is the most influential, even if you're talking about night, and
I wouldn't disagree with that at all. About night.
And so I think that it could wear on somebody in that fact. And I would semi argue, because you know your head better than me, which I would argue is also false, but I know better. I know you better than you know you. No, I'm kidding. But I could see it from that standpoint, just that it feels almost so typical just because of how influential it's been to that, to the genre in general, and not just
the John Carter effect.
Well, the thing is it's not even just, it's to horror in general. It's not just to, I wouldn't even say just to the zombie genre, subgenre.
You know what I've never seen, which I'd want to get your snap reaction on?
Okay.
I have never seen the Tom Savini remake of Night of the Living Dead from 92.
Fun. You said night, right?
Yeah. The remake from 92.
Fun. And it kind of... I have a hard time because I'd rather just watch the original than that, but it's kind of a fun, and if you're curious and you're a big zombie fanatic, which I'm not necessarily, it's not one of my actual favorite subgenres. Mm-hmm. I like a good zombie flick, but I won't chase down every single one that I can find. But it's kind of fun, and you get great effects because it's Tom Savini, and but it doesn't, I mean... If you really, for you specifically, I would say just stick with the source material. If you're curious, maybe go for it. But other than that, it's not.
Mm-hmm. I would watch it. I would be interested just to see, like, I know those, like, Shopper Shot remakes are, like, really annoying to a lot of people. But, like, I'm sort of interested on it on a formal level. Not necessarily, like, I expect to love it. But yeah. But I'm interested just to see, like, I bet, like, visually it probably connects more to Dawn and Day than it does, then, you know, because night visually is pretty a different kind of thing. Maybe I'll find it and watch it for the end of the month, just out of pure curiosity. Because I've seen the original Night of the Living Dead 1,000 times.
Yeah. I'm really disappointed about The Howling, but that's okay. We can be friends still. For now.
Let's do the last segment. Instead of doing a Netflix homework, we're going to do this thing called, Hey, Look What's on Netflix. I just invented that title for the segment. No, we're going to just scroll through the horror section of what's on Netflix right now and just recommend what we're seeing as something that might be worth seeing.
Train to Busan is talking about zombie films is very much worth seeing. It's a South Korean film.
Mm-hmm.
But it's action-y and fun and kind of different just because of where it's set and how it's set and how it functions. But it's I very much recommend it. It actually kind of got to me, not at a horror level, but mm-hmm. at kind of like a sentimental level. There's a lot of like family dynamic going on in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I recommend that pretty much to anybody who's semi into horror.
Sure.
It does play at a broader, I would say it's a broader film too. It's not like, this isn't like a cult kind of like, oh, you might like this.
And not as extreme as some of the stuff from South Korea or more.
No, not at all. Again, okay. It's broader.
So maybe a little bit more Bong Joon-ho ish.
Yeah, and I would say even more broad than that, than Bong Joon-ho, because he always has like kind of a quirky kind of weirdness to it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this is kind of like it's kind of like standard, but I'm not using that in a kind of pejorative sense.
But a little bit more poppy.
It's very much, it's kind of realistic. There is some things. And it's very much about the family and very much about, like, the characters and stuff like that. But it's fun, yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
The first one I'm seeing on here that I would recommend that's not totally obvious is The Craft, 1996. Neve Campbell, Fruza Balk, or Witches in High School.
Yeah.
I saw that on TV when I was a kid and thought, you know, whatever. It was, like, of that era. So it didn't really occur to me that it was anything other than just, like, a teen horror movie.
It has some weird 90s to it, for sure. Oh, yeah,
but it dates badly in the best way possible.
It has like, 90s camp, for
yeah,
heavy.
Yeah, well, and just camp in general. Like, I mean, I know apparently, like, now there's a, in San Francisco, there's a group of drag queens who do The Craft every year around Halloween.
I've heard, yeah. I know it has a LGBT following,
sure,
if you will.
I saw this in my cult cinema class. I had a ball with it. I mean, the first time I saw one as a kid, I was just like, whatever, these are famous people in a slick teen horror movie. Now watching it, it's hilarious and it's really fun. I think kind of works on a general story level. It's not so bad that it's like just ridiculous. It's like Hackers. It's so 90s that it is sort of self-parody.
I think The Hackers, that's a good, that hits it on the dot, yes.
Right.
The one that I'll recommend, we actually did, review this,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not going to assume that everybody's listened to every single thing we've ever done ever.
Sure.
But a film that I really enjoyed, you were kind of about it, but Housebound. This exists in the horror comedy kind of realm, and I would say it tilts more comedy than horror, but
mm-hmm.
but not overly so. It's not gaggy.
Right.
But it's kind of a fun little New Zealand kind of wild what's going on here kind of ride. If you're into kind of a more fun kind of tone and you want to watch something that just kind of is light and poppy and kind of engaging, I think Housebound, I really enjoyed it. So it's about this it's basically about this girl who is on house arrest with her folks because mm-hmm. she's gotten into trouble and strange things are happening and she's trying to sort them out and what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely give this little fun, quirky, strange New Zealand flick a shot.
If you like New Zealand horror, which is a thing.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know,
not a bad thing.
No, yeah. I mean, I think before the show, or might have made it into the show, I don't remember now, you mentioned Black Sheep.
There's that.
There's that movie. There's also that one with Dead Alive, the Peter Jackson thing. It has that sort of lineage. Or even
Bad
like
Taste, Frighteners. Those are also the Peter Jackson ones. But
Taika Waititi's What We Do in the Shadows.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So New Zealand horror. It's a look into it.
It's quirky and fun.
Mm-hmm. This is a movie I reviewed earlier in the year and is still in contention for my favorite movie officially of the year. And it's on Netflix and it's batshit crazy and it's disgusting. Everyone should see it. It's called Raw. It's a movie. It's a sort of a coming of age, parable about a vegan girl who goes to veterinary school, and through a crude initiation of being tricked into eating meat, she begins to crave meat more and more and more. And it goes to some pretty dark and disgusting places. But it's also kind of a sweet coming-of-age story about this girl sort of coming to terms with her sexuality and her family and sisterhood. And it's doing a lot of interesting things. And it has some of the most squeamy, like hard-to-watch stuff I've seen in cinema in a while. So it's a weird combination of like 16 Candles meets French extreme horror.
This didn't engage me, honestly. I saw it in theaters and I knew it was like one of your favorites, so I never reached out to you about it. I get the appeal mostly, but just didn't do much for me. It just didn't engage me.
You're wrong.
No, it's fine.
I dare say call it a perfect film.
Get out. And it's not for the reason. I don't mind the art house kind of horror thing that people are talking about, even though I think some films, people who argue that It Follows is an art house horror film is sort of silly to me. And the films that have all gotten thrown into this little thing that they made, I think is, this one definitely is more art house and definitely isn't going for your normal kind of ride, boo, scare kind of disgusto, whatever horror film. It's got some higher aspirations and things it's trying to do and say. I think one reason it didn't necessarily grab me though is as a fan of horror of all types and sorts and slow burn to ultra gory to extreme horror or whatever you want to call it. People kept telling me how like disgusting it was, and I was just like, "No, they eat people. Yeah, it's fine." It didn't disgust me in any way.
I did me. It got me.
Lightweight. You should try people once in a while.
All right. Well, is there anything else here you're seeing?
The only one that I've seen. There's definitely a few on my list to watch, but one I've seen, The Void. I will give a warning because I got into a big discussion with some friends earlier on about this, but I don't, the ending kind of falls flat. Mm-hmm. But the first two thirds I think is really solid. And if you're a fan of, and it kind of has a lot of similarities to The Thing and in a good way at the start.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of has some Lovecraft and some, not giallo, but the guy, but it's kind of, it's Italian horror, The Beyond.
Okay. Is that Mario Bava or somebody else?
I think it's somebody else.
Okay.
It's one of the, it's Fulci. That's who it is.
Oh, Fulci. Okay.
Right. Yeah. So it has some ties into The Thing and to the Beyond, the Fulci movie. I think the characters are fairly engaging. I think the story in general is fairly engaging until it reaches its kind of third act. But if you're into kind of Lovecraftian stuff as well, I would say if you're into any of the things I've said, you could give it a shot. And also if you're just looking for something new, it does kind of fall into a territory of kind of low independent budget, but going for big effects kind of films.
Mm-hmm.
I know you weren't sold on We Are Still Here, but it's kind of, I would say kind of in that category. Again, I didn't really find the ending that great either, but hey, maybe you'll have a different experience.
The Void?
The Void.
And this is on Netflix?
This is on Netflix.
All right. The last one I want to recommend is a little bit more obvious. And that's Wes Craven's New Nightmare. This is sort of Wes Craven sort of sharpening his meta tools before he jumps headlong into that with Scream more explicitly. But New Nightmare sort of is him revisiting Freddy Krueger and the Nightmare on Elm Street series through this sort of looking at it as a pop culture entity that already exists and sort of commenting on the popularity of the franchise, on franchises in general, on his connection to this character and what that's done to his career and what it did to New Line Cinema and what it's done to the actress Heather Langenkamp, who returns to play herself and the character she plays sort of at the same time. It's a really subtly clever movie. Like, you watch it and it doesn't feel like it's going through all these like hoops as you're watching it. You're just sort of enjoying it as a kind of high concept Freddy Krueger movie. But, you know, upon revisiting it and then especially watching Scream after it, realizing where he's kind of coming from, it's one of the more interesting ones of the series. I would say maybe second favorite next to the original. But yeah, and it's a little darker than the other ones too.
As for a high concept, and it kind of it's also literally Wes Craven coming back to one of his own creations.
Mm-hmm.
He served as a producer on the other ones, but those other ones fell into this kind of weird dreamscape kind of horror, and you already talked about the kind of plasticness of it, and this mm-hmm. this goes more for a visceral. And I like the high concept. I understand why it fell kind of by the wayside for maybe some of the core base fans mm-hmm. of the franchise. But yeah, no, I think that's a solid film.
Yeah.
My last recommendation is The Legend of Hell House. Unless you had more to say.
Nope, that's it. That's okay. A classic haunted house film, right?
Yes, The Legend of Hell House is based on Richard Matheson book.
Speaking of.
It's my favorite Richard Matheson book.
Mm-hmm.
But the teleplay is also done by him. He was actually a fairly prolific screenwriter mm-hmm. For a time.
He wrote a lot for Twilight Zone.
Yeah. But I feel like this is a movie that a lot of people missed. It's not the Uninvited. It's not Carnival of Souls and some of those more classic ones
mm-hmm.
that got picked up by Criterion. This is actually, it did get a re-release through Scream Factory, mm-hmm. but I just never heard much about it ever. But it tells the classic story. It's not super gory. It does lean into the supernatural, but it has this interesting dynamic in the book and in the movie where it's a scientist trying to debunk the ghosts versus a spiritualist that's trying to prove that her stuff isn't hokey and fake. And you kind of get this kind of weird thing in between them, where is this ghost house and the booze and the scares and what's happening. I think it's a classic, and it's in that classic style. If you like that kind of stuff, I think you should check it out. And I don't know why I don't understand why it's so ignored. Maybe some other people will feel different, like it's kind of hokey. But I think it's up there with, like, you know, like
the original Haunting. Yeah, I was going to say
Uninvited. Carnival of Souls has its own, like, surrealism is kind of a different one, really.
Yeah, that's kind of a cult film too.
It kind of gets thrown in there now, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? Because as cult films go along, and I'm sure you know more about this, but as they kind of go along, they kind of get brought canonized. Up in different ways. Well, they do get canonized. Like, I mean, is Blade Runner really a cult film anymore? Because it was for a certain period of time, but at this point, I don't understand if it is still really a cult film or not. So, well,
I think the supposed failure of Blade Runner 2 monetarily might suggest that it is still a cult film. And I say that as somebody who liked the sequel.
Well, I have not seen it yet, so I can't comment on that too much. I didn't even mean to bring up that whole can of worms, but yeah, no, Legend of Hell House, classic ghost style, like mm-hmm. classic supernatural, goes back to an older style, but it's kind of interesting because it is a movie that's literally in between. You know, it's in between like the older, like, 60s supernatural quiet ghost stuff, mm-hmm. and coming into the era of exploitation and everything. So it has kind of a fun mix. And it's also Richard Matheson. I think he's pretty...
He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I think he's pretty classic. And I think if you don't like him, I think you're missing out. Anyways.
The original novelist for I Am Legend, which has been the inspiration to several films, some better than others.
Correct.
Cool. Well, then that's our Halloween episode.
Well, that was fun.
It was. We talked about horror movies. We argued a lot. Felt like old times.
Actually, this was really tame for the arguing, I thought. Nobody got called that many names or anything. No. I mean, I did claim my right over your brain, but...
You did.
But other than that, I think it was fairly okay.
So one last time, where do people find your short story in the anthology?
If you go to muzzlelandpress.com, you can go to their store, which will take you to the store Envy, and it is called 16... Or Terror in 16 Bits. You can also get it on the Big Evil A Amazon, and it is called Terror in 16 Bits.
Yes.
I am the fourth story in the compilation. You will find me on page 91. I don't know if that's true, actually. I think it's close, but I don't know if that's actually the right page.
Somewhere in the middle.
Okay. I was really happy to be in it. So.
Yeah. I'm going to do kind of a truncated version of my end spiel, since this is already a non-traditional episode. So I'm just going to say, email us with your verdict on Dawn of the Dead versus Day of the Dead and The Howling versus, Werewolf in Paris, or Werewolf in Paris. That goes into a whole other thing.
Bam, Howling won that one.
I'm sort of a Werewolf in Paris apologist, but, Werewolf in London versus The Howling.
The CGI date's bad, but it has some merits.
jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. Also, you can find us on Twitter at Jabber Podcast. You can listen to us and stream us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, Player.fm, Pocket Cast, all the things. Keith, he does things. He's on stuff. Like, look up Tonight in San Diego. That's his big thing. So that's there on the internet. And we're going to call it a week. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Happy Halloween.
Aw, thanks. Whoa. Happy Halloween, folks.
Bye.
Bye.